This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 58 with Eric Dosell. Welcome to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Eric Dosell. Eric, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
No problems, Eric. And as we do with all our guests that come on the podcast here, what we'll get Eric to do is just give a bit of an intro about himself and his business so he can let everybody know what he's all about.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. My name is Eric Dosell, and I am the CEO and co-founder of BrightGage Software, which is my primary business and my primary focus, which is a business intelligence platform catering to the SMB market, but really focused on the narrow niche of IT service providers and SMBs. Prior to starting BrightGage, I started a managed service provider company and ended up growing it and eventually selling it in 2012. Spending about a year there and then exited so I could focus full-time in the software business. And I come from a family business. My father actually originally started our family company in 1980, providing IT maintenance, which whatever you would say IT back then, in 1980, maintenance to mainframe computers. So it's been in my blood for quite some time.
That's certainly an interesting way to come. You've obviously been a veteran in the industry. I mean, was it, you know, obviously coming from your family background, is that the path that you always took, you know, always into IT because of your dad and then into a business and from there?
So my father was a fourth generation in his family business, and he ended up leaving to start his own because he felt that IT was really a growing industry back in 1980. And so I've always had a technology background in the family, kind of a fabric in the family, but really it's been about the family business and just working together. So I knew eventually I would come back to the family business, but the number one rule was I had to go out and get experience elsewhere, which is when I spent time working on Wall Street before I could come back. So it wasn't that I only worked at the family business, get other experiences to bring back.
Okay, so you talk about owning an MSP, which I believe we should, you know, the first thing you did, then you started moving into metrics. So, I mean, why did you, I suppose, take that path? Was that a natural path or was that a decision that you made to say, look, you know, I don't want to be in the MSP business, so I see this as a bigger opportunity?
So we launched the MSP business in 2004 unsuccessfully, or I guess we kind of fumbled a bit. And then really got everything together in 2007. And that was right before the financial crisis hit. And so we had a huge uptick in opportunity with our customers that were looking to save money, predictable expenses. We were looking for a way to predict our revenue. So it kind of made sense for us and our business was growing. In 2010, my father left that business to really focus on two of our other companies. And then my brother left in 2011 to go work on our software business, BrightGage. So I found myself running the company alone. And what I really missed was the interaction with the family. And then in 2012, when we had to make the decision, do we want to reinvent ourselves, the cloud and all these different factors were coming in. We sat as a family and made the strategic decision. Let's find a way to exit where all the employees can land safely and find a real partner. And that's what we were able to do. I guess that was summer of 2012.
And how big was the business at that point? How many employees?
So when we sold the company, we were about 55 employees. We started out with 7. And when my father asked me to start the business, we were doing about $60,000 a month in monthly recurring. When we ended up selling it, we were on a run rate to do just shy of $10 million. So it was a pretty fast growth rate. Over that 5.5 year period. But it was 55 employees. We were dealing with about our average contract size, just because I always like to share this just kind of as a point of reference. We typically were in the $7,000 to $8,000 range because we tended to go after larger customers and outsource their entire IT department. But we were about $10 million in run rate.
So when you sat down with the the family to make that decision, and obviously with the change to the cloud and all that, was that influenced mainly by personal decisions or by technology? So did you see that the challenges coming with the cloud were too difficult to sort of move? I mean, what was the decision sort of to move away from the MSP business?
It was really where we had the other companies were really soaking up a lot of our resources. And we were at a decision point, kind of a fork in the road with the managed services. Do we evolve again, which we knew we could, and we'd come out the other end just as strong as we went in, and probably stronger. But when we took a step back and said, we have our software, we have our security, we have our cabling business, how do we want to really prioritize our most precious resource, our time? And so we thought, this is a good time. We're on a fast growth rate to be able to exit it. But we still, to this day, I mean, our software business continues to just sell 100% to managed service providers. I love the industry.
So, do you see that obviously the cloud and the change and the need to reinvent, is that something that other MSPs are achieving successfully? Are they in that process? Are they behind in that process? I mean, how do you see it from an industry point of view as to obviously the change that people need to make?
I think everyone is starting to make the change. I think they're in different stages in how fast they're making the change. So everyone realizes that the commodity of help desk outsourcing or desktop support is starting to get very competitive. And it really started, at least for me personally, when they started bringing in iPads, iPhones, all these devices that were complicating the network, but we really couldn't charge more per device. And so what we're seeing is people trying to move up the stack, and they're moving in different ways. Some of them are moving up to become those advisors and really advise the customers with software and decisions that they need to make on a business process level. The issue that we've heard, and again, this is more anecdotal than actual hard evidence, is that customers are not seeing the value where they want to pay a premium for that type of advice. So they're struggling a bit there. Some people are starting to explore and getting into the data and helping customers manage their data. I mean, the whole big data and business intelligence thing is really blowing up right now. So that's definitely another angle. And then other folks, I would say, are really in a land grab mode right now. And they're just expanding because they're seeing economies of scale as they grow. Now, the majority of our customers, just another point of reference, are typically 10 to 50 employees. And so they're not, I wouldn't say they're micro MSPs, they're not small, but they're not huge. And they're still playing in a market space where they're adding value to their customers because they're taking away that single point of contact, that taking away that headache.
So do you see that sort of market is something is it going to be stagnant? Do you see consolidation? I mean, from your point of view, obviously selling tools into that market, I mean, what are you seeing from the businesses in there? Are they, like I said, are they looking to keep growing, to get the economies of scale? I mean, what's the general feel of the market?
I think the general feel is everyone is struggling with where to get more leads and more qualified leads. And the majority of people that we speak to are looking on how to streamline their operations to cut cost and cut the waste. And that's where we spend the majority of our time advising our customers, like, you know, efficiency ratios and how to help get more out of their resources to keep their cost structure either in line or drop. So I think since people are struggling a bit on the top line, I think they're really focused on how to get more operationally efficient.
All right, so let's speak about obviously the BrightGage side of things and what it does and how it helps people and why an MSP should be looking at that sort of tool.
So the concept of BrightGage is really just a single place where you can get your information and make better decisions and at least maybe not better but faster decisions, because the information is in one place for you to analyze and make choices. And it started out just client facing. So we struggled as an MSP on just pulling data from different sources, because as a typical MSP has at least three or four different tools that they work with to provide a service to a customer. And so to show the customer the value you're bringing, it's very difficult because you're pulling information from different places. As it evolved, really where we've seen the most value is helping our customers cut down the amount of time they're either doing reporting, so they have data everywhere and it's very manual, or They're trying to make decisions on what are the right customers to be going after, and or which of my employees is not being as productive as others, so that they can squeeze efficiency out of there. And so a tool that brings everything together under one roof, and BrightGauge is one of several, but a tool that can bring all that in one area and make it easy for the business user where you don't need a techie or a technical degree to do it, is where we're seeing kind of the benefit and the value proposition to our customers.
So, I mean, is that a tool that you've developed from scratch yourself and you've built up and you've done through experience? I mean, how has the tool sort of evolved over time?
So the tool, yes, we built the entire technology stack from the ground up. So it's our IP all the way through. We built a proof of concept for ourselves because we were struggling. We were a ConnectWise and Kaseya shop, and we were struggling with data to be able to provide a report to a customer. And so we built the software just to pull data from those two things and share it with our customers. And when we showed it at a peer group, which I'm a huge fan and a huge believer in peer groups, everyone really got excited about it. And they said, would you mind if we leveraged it? And so we worked with a couple people on it. And then before you know it, it kind of took a life of its own. And then from client data, people then said, look, I want to look at my internal data. And then now I don't want to just look at a report. I want to look at this in real time, put it up on a dashboard so my team can share it. And now our next release coming out later on this year in the August timeframe will introduce any data source you can plug in. So you're not just limited to a couple of the MSP data sources that we currently work with.
Okay, so I mean, you can pull data from all sources. I mean, we're talking accounting, we're talking about, you know, Kaseya, ConnectWise, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to start with the ones that are very heavy in the MSP market, and anything with a SQL database, Excel spreadsheet, anything like that you'll be able to pull in. We'll then have a priority list of API-based integrations that we'll be working on that are a little bit more require a little bit more work on our end to connect to them. But come August 1st, any data source that's running on a SQL database, you'll be able to pull in that data. And the data source right after that that we'll be introducing is the financial packages. So that way, in one dashboard, if you're an owner, you can see where are my receivables, where's my revenue, all that coming out of your financial application. You know, what clients have the most tickets? How's my sales pipeline looking over the next 30, 60, 90 days? All that, whether it's on a however you want to consume it, a dashboard, or if you want to look at it on your iPhone or your Android device on a report that's sent to you.
So, I mean, why do you think the metrics are so important, I mean, these days? I mean, why would somebody invest in your product? What's it going to give them as a competitive advantage over, you know, somebody else or help improve their business?
I think the first reason is there's a big time savings in just pulling reports. Most people have some kind of reporting that they look at on a somewhat frequent basis. So I want to look at my aging or my receivables on a, you know, weekly basis, or I want to see what are my top, you know, who's entered the most time or what are my profitable accounts, those type of things. And so there's a big time savings there. The other aspect is this whole kind of shift of introducing data into your decision-making process. It's not just making a gut feel. I mean, the majority of MSPs tend to be technical people that kind of fell into it, started the company. So you have a good gut feel, but as the business starts growing, it's a best practice to start introducing some data and some metrics to making decisions. And we have a methodology that we roll out to our customers about, it's not just, hey, follow whatever the best practice is or whatever metric you hear. Let's get a baseline. How is your business performing? So you start to get that pulse of how your business is performing. And then to be able to look at when there's an uptick or a downtick, just like everyone looks at their P&L. That's obviously a key metric. There's other metrics that will help throttle up or down and help you make decisions. And you can see some of those decisions ahead of time if you have the information in front of you.
So do you, for example, take the information as an aggregate and then you can provide it back to your users to say, look, you know, the industry average is X or Y? I mean, do you do that sort of next level by aggregating even more data to give them a better idea of how they're performing relative to other BrightGauge users?
That's something we've talked about doing. We're not currently doing. We do follow some of the best practices that and benchmarking of some of the peer groups that are out there, HTG, True Profits Group, True Methods, And so we'll incorporate some of those, but we have, we've talked about it, but we have not rolled out anything formal to aggregate our user base and how they're doing.
Okay. So with all those metrics, with all those numbers coming in, I mean, what's your top, you know, three or four metrics that people, you know, that a business owner should be looking at, and what should they be? I mean, what things should they be paying attention to all the time in your experience?
So in my experience, there's only a certain amount of metrics you can look at. I mean, we have customers that they want to see 20, 30, 40 different metrics. It's very difficult. And so what we recommend, and the way I used to run my MSP, is what are the key areas of your business, and then pick one or two metrics that you're going to measure until you get it within the threshold that you want, and then move on to something else. So as an example, sales for me was a big passion of mine. I knew as long as I was, my father used to say that new sales solves a lot of problems. And so I knew that I had needed to keep a certain pipeline of active opportunities, because I knew that that would deliver a certain amount of revenue over time. So I knew as long as I was keeping those active and updated, and that I would work in those, I wouldn't have to worry about my revenue down the road. So that was something under sales. And then within sales, I had, as I grew a sales team, we'd look at, okay, you may not be closing a deal immediately because you're new and you're getting to know the system, but how productive are you being as a sales rep? So it may not just be closing deals, but how many appointments do you have? How many people have you called? How many lunches, networking events, those type of thing. So those were two key sales area. On the service side, my key area was how long it was taking us to respond to tickets, because it was my belief that customers, as long as you're responding and communicating to them, they were okay. And they knew that you were working on it and that sort of stuff. So how long it took to respond to tickets, how many were open versus closed in a given day, to get an idea on the backlog. Am I overstaffed, understaffed, that sort of stuff. And then, so those are kind of two on the ticketing and the operational of the team. And then the other one that I really looked at was everyone who entered their time, what percentage was what we called billable versus not billable, to see how efficient we were. So in those just five metrics that I gave you there, I have an idea, a pulse on, am I bringing in the business I need to bring in? Am I being responsive to the people that I've brought in? And then my team, are they being efficient in delivering those? And you can start expanding those and looking into more and more, but just a couple of those high level could transform your business.
I mean, are you seeing that with people, obviously, who start using your tool, look at those sort of metrics? Are they seeing that uptick? I mean, how long are they waiting before they sort of see that uptick? Is it something they'll get immediately?
So typically, we see a big uptick within the first week of deploying BrightGage, because the transparency amongst the team is there. So everybody knows that someone's watching and the metrics are being there. So all of a sudden you start seeing timesheets being entered more regularly and more accurately. You start seeing tickets being updated, on a regular basis. The salespeople that couldn't bother to put in their opportunities and their activities and how productive they were before start to do it. So we start seeing it immediately. There is a kind of a diminishing return probably over the 6 to 7 month mark. And that's typically where folks are like, hey, the metrics are in line, we're happy. And that's when we re-engage with them to say, okay, what else do we need to work on? Maybe your pipeline's fine, but why is your pipeline taking so long to close? Or your engineers, how do we know that how can we get them to resolve the issue the first time instead of two or three time entries? And so you can constantly be improving it. But it's definitely an initial wow factor, especially when you see a report and it points out a hole like, hey, I have 50 tickets that no one's assigned to. So if a customer were to email, respond, or have a question, no one's even going to hear about it. Those are like those aha moments. So those are big. And then the time savings for people to be able to pull this information, that's the other big benefit that they see pretty early on.
Okay. Now, one of the other things you mentioned there was sales, and you know how keen you are on that. I mean, how do you rate, you know, your average, the typical client you're dealing with, maybe up to the 10 employee level, when it comes to sales? Are they doing enough? Do they have enough skills in that area? I mean, is it something that they need to focus on, do you think?
I think sales is one of the most underrated areas within the IT service provider market. Most people that, like I mentioned earlier, most people that start an IT company are typically engineers or a group of people that were engineers and they kind of got into this. And so they don't have a big focus on sales. And a lot of them say, I rely on referrals. Now, I will tell you, just as much as I say that they don't have an emphasis on sales and it's not probably one of their core beliefs, on the complete flip side, because they are not sales, you know, the typical stereotype of a car salesman or a shark type personality, they have the trust factor. And so they can very quickly build that trust with the customer. The issue is it's only one person that's usually doing it. How do you kind of grow that? So I definitely think it's an area that's neglected. It's an area that needs more emphasis. And it's really, I think, more about introducing some of the processes that'll certainly help a lot of folks.
So, I mean, what's a typical, you know, if there is someone out there who's obviously an MSP and feels that they want to be more focused on sales or they want to obviously place some emphasis on that, I mean, is it something that they should be teaching themselves and learning, or should they be looking to get a dedicated sales specialist? I mean, how do they handle that transition from being the technical owner to being a more sales-focused owner?
I think the number one thing is to document all the sales activity. When we launched our sales team, it was 1-2 people, and then eventually we got up to 7 people. And the big improvement was when everyone was documenting everything they were doing, and then understanding what activities were driving a lot of return on those investments. So if I'm a MSP or a business owner, more technical, and I want to start introducing more, kind of take sales to the next level, the first thing I would start doing is documenting everything I'm doing from a sales standpoint to be able to track the productivity. And that way, the next person that comes in can follow that along, and then you can keep an eye on what they're doing and monitor that they are doing the right things to be successful eventually once they get ramped up and that sort of stuff.
So you would say that documentation is key, not only obviously in sales, but in a lot of areas within an MSP.
Absolutely. And the more you can document and streamline and standardize, the better. I know that's easier said than done. I mean, we always claim to be very much into that, and we still had a ton of manual processes. But the more you can get people to put it down on paper and to be able to look at it and then be able to look back on it so that to just try to connect some of the dots so that you just don't look after a year and say, wow, I don't know how I either grew or shrank the business, whatever the case may be, that you have some idea like, oh, this month was a bad month, or this month, you know, I was out networking all the time. And look, 2 months later, I had a lot of uptick in business. You start drawing connecting some of those dots. And before you know it, you start saying, okay, you know what, when I hire a salesperson, they're going to go to those networking events because I know that that's higher probability of getting me somewhere. It also makes it easier to be able to manage them if you're not on top of them all the time.
So, I mean, did you have any sort of preference for how you went about documenting? How did you capture that information? Was there a, you know, preferred method or way that you went about that you found worked for you?
The way that worked most efficient for me was simply writing down and documenting in some CRM system, whether it's your PSA or a Salesforce, whatever the case may be, and just labeling the activities that you're doing. If you can get people to put in notes, it's great, but just like to get an engineer to enter time and update the documentation, I'll take just entering the time and get us accurate on what they're doing as kind of that first step, and then you can determine how much detail do you really need. A lot of the systems now make it very easy so that at the end of the day, you can just simply in a drop-down menu say, I had 2 phone calls with these people. I had a meeting, a lunch, and it takes 5 to 10 minutes. Salespeople like to only do things that are really going to return on their, get them more commission. So the lower you can make the bar on that, the more value I think you'd get as an owner.
So, I mean, I think obviously this comes back to the E-Myth where they talk about the documentation and process standardization and those sort of things. Are you finding that this is something that MSPs are moving towards, or are they still, you know, not getting the message? Are they still running their businesses a bit ad hoc and all running it out of the off the top, you know, out of their mind rather than actually down on paper?
I feel like depending on the strength of the owner or the manager, that's the area that they're weakest at, and they will bring some processes into other areas. So the technical owner probably doesn't have a lot of documentation on the customer networks and that sort of stuff. But they will do in other areas that they're not sure of and that they're trying to improve on. And then the way I learned was learning from others in peer groups. And I was part of the True Methods group as well, where you just learn these little best practices and you get these little tips that just make it so much easier. So you don't have to bang your head against the wall. You can speed up the learning process and improve your business almost overnight.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, it's important to do the peer groups. I mean, are we talking obviously a formal thing, or can it be an informal thing? Will that work just as well, or does it have to be a formal situation where you obviously need to present your accounts and be accountable for a certain number of key metrics? I mean, is that what's really required?
I think it depends on what the MSP. I was a fan of that. I wasn't. At the beginning, it was very casual. I'd get together with other folks, and we called it co-opetition in the area, where we'd sit together and we'd talk. What are you charging? What are you seeing in the market? What are people pushing back? And, you know, as an owner of a business, it can be very lonely. You don't have a lot of people to talk to and who to bounce your ideas off of. So it's good to find other folks. I would say at a minimum, find someone similar that provides a similar service, and maybe it's geographical, you don't want to compete with them, but that's why these conferences are great to meet people and just have a regular conversation. If you don't want to get too formal, no need. But then as you get more and more comfortable, and I think as you get more and more value, you're going to find that something with a bit more structure, even if you build your own structure between a small informal group, but a bit more structure, I think it will be extremely helpful.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, these groups are out there, they're growing, and a lot of people do, I suppose, get involved with them. But a lot of them have a minimum requirement, I found. You know, so many employees, so much turnover. Obviously, they're looking at the higher end of the scale. I mean, what can the smaller operator do? I mean, in this general MSP environment, do you see that the small operator who perhaps is, maybe not looking to grow to a 50, 60 man business, but, you know, obviously wants to have a comfortable living. Is there still room in the market for those sort of people, or effectively are they, you know, is it only a matter of time before they basically won't have the business because it'll be potentially eaten up by the larger players who are looking to expand?
I think there's plenty of room for what you're calling the smaller MSPs for sure. And it may be that they don't join a formal peer group. So the peer group I was a part of, HTG, they had a minimum requirement. I think it was a couple of million in revenue. And now they're trying to cater to the smaller market with more of a virtual. And when I remember when I asked, because one of my friendly co-opetition companies in Miami, they wanted to join. And on the peer group side, they said, you know what, the issue is those smaller companies, the owner tends to not be able to get away to go to meetings. And so it doesn't really work the normal structure. And so that's why they introduced that virtual kind of peer group. But I think the next time you go into a competition with someone, you find out who the company is, I would give them a call, sit down, grab lunch, talk to them. Everyone's sort of providing the same services. It's better that everyone shares the information and everyone improves, versus that typical technology where you want to, you know, just kill the competition and everything gets faster and cheaper over time. I think there's room to be able to work, but that trust takes time.
Well, it would certainly be the case that, you know, customers still need technology. Customers are, you know, using more and more technology, and they still do need someone to depend on to do the things that they can't. But what about the threat of, obviously, you know, the threat of the search engine where customers can look at it themselves, services like Google Apps or Office 365, which again is encouraging customers to do it themselves and inverted commas make it easy, and the cloud stuff is making obviously deployments much easier and that sort of stuff, which you would rely on your IT provider MSP to do. I mean, is there more business or less business do you see for your typical operator in this environment going forward?
So, you know, I'm not sure how to answer that one. I'm not sure how to answer that one, Robert.
So, well, let me try it this way. Do you see that obviously we've had a traditional model where the MSP and you had stuff on premise and you could count 4 servers and 5 workstations and you could charge a fee for those. Now we're looking at a number of devices. We're looking at potentially no servers and cloud hosted systems. How dramatically does an MSP have to change the model, the way they charge per month, per device, or per whatever? I mean, will that model still apply, do you think, even though we are seeing a change in the way the infrastructure is deployed?
I definitely think there is going to be a change in the model. And my belief was that everyone you came up with whatever the numbers were to try to get to that optimal fee. And so at one point it was by user, then people moved to a device. We were right at the time of the sale moving into a charging by vendor and then by employee, because those things were typically something that you can kind of hold on to. The issue that I found in my experience was in the smaller companies, let's say under 50 employees, maybe even under 40, there was a disconnect in the value that they were willing to spend for IT support versus the cost to deliver the support they were expecting. So as an example, that the Office 365 you're mentioning, or Dropbox, where you say, oh, I'm going to get all my storage for $10 a month per user. I have 10 users. Well, you do the math. And then they say, but I need you to help me manage the process and monitor things and do all this stuff. And you come in with a fee of $2,000. There's a disconnect because they're saying, well, I'm getting all this technology for under $200. And you're charging me all this high-end money. So I think people are trying to find new avenues to try to drive that price up and justify the value. But I think, as I mentioned at the beginning, the commodity of the per device or the help desk cost is going down. And that's where I think the business process, whether it's consulting or advisory or things, helping customers with their data. There's also part of me that thinks that we're going to go back to how we started before MSPs, which was more of the consulting and project-based. So it's a little bit smaller businesses, not so much as big a scale as things get easier and easier to maintain. But there's definitely an evolution going on right now.
So one of the things for me when I look at the market is what I see, especially for the smaller players or the players who probably can't reach that tipping point, whether they're large enough to be able to spread their costs and keep growing, the HTG type level, is the fact that, again, they really need to buddy up, or they need to find someone that can fill in the gaps they may have in their offering. So, like I said, if you need someone to consult on project management or accounting, the important thing is to go out to the market and look at your peer group, look at the people and connect up with these people and share business, rather than trying to be that person that's, like you talked about, killing business and trying to win everything for themselves. So I think that the group mentality is that we've got all the skills we need amongst us. We just need to cooperate and share those skills so that, everybody can continue to benefit and the customers get the best result. And that allows the individual businesses perhaps to specialize in something a bit more and charge a good fee rather than trying to do everything poorly. I think that's, to me, I see that's a successful route to take. But I don't know if the traditional MSP or the traditional IT owner is going that way or thinking that way, because they've obviously, as you mentioned, started out as a, I can start this business, and they've grown it, and they've been a lone gun for a long time, and they've been relatively successful at it. And that mentality doesn't really endear a lot of sharing, a lot of cooperation. And I find generally that they're a bit hesitant to actually share the numbers and do those sort of things, to actually take that step and trust somebody who may be their competitor. I mean, is that a fair comment, do you think?
Absolutely. And I think people tend to be, and I know I was for years, that I didn't want to share. And so I try to do everything. And my belief is that, like you just articulated, I think people are going to get more specialized. and they're going to focus on their particular niche and then bring in other people when necessary. And there is going to be a value to the person that owns the end user relationship, but there's no way that you can be a SharePoint expert, a project management expert, doing their mobile strategy, their all these different things. The other question I have, and I actually had a conversation with a customer of ours a couple weeks ago, is as you get more specialized, the nice thing about being a generalist is that you can generalize and do it geographically. If you do help desk support, you can kind of do it around. But if you're very specialized in a particular niche, you end up limiting your geographic requiring to expand geographically. And that brings a different level of complexity. So one of our customers used to provide the full gauntlet of services. And then now they're just focused on virtualization, VMware's a particular and Dell product line. But now their team is flying all over the place because there's only a certain amount of companies in their backyard that they can provide that for. So I think it's just going to change a little bit of the dynamic.
Okay, well, we've talked about the MSP. Another opportunity that you've obviously taken with your business is around the software development and, you know, obviously bringing that product to market. I mean, I think that's also a very relevant and very great opportunity for a lot of businesses. I mean, do they have to be coders to produce a product?
I don't believe so. Neither my brother nor I, who are the two founders of BrightGage, are coders. I've never written a line of code in my life. So I think what's great about software and about already being in the technology industry is we know the power of that technology can bring, the ease of scalability, and all the benefits. And so what I tell my customers is figure out a problem that you're having, and maybe it's with a software you're already using, and scratch your own itch, which is how we started with BrightGage. We needed a reporting solution, and if you have it, chances are other people have it. And with today's crowdsourcing opportunities and all these different websites to be able to bring in freelancing, by putting something on a piece of paper and leveraging some of the design tools and creating mock-ups and things, you can create almost a working prototype, at least, you know, online, and then be able to outsource and say someone to build it. And the beauty of software is that it's so easy to grow, so easy to scale, and it's not incrementally expensive as you begin to grow. So you can start very small and get a company off the ground for very little and then really take off because it's something you can sell globally.
I think, yeah, then that's the secret. Obviously, now with the growth in the mobile apps as well, I mean, that's where we're seeing a lot of opportunity. And again, people are willing to pay a few bucks for some sort of something that's a bit novel. So, and as you mentioned, I don't think that the development costs are particularly high. And that obviously lends itself to a bit of experimentation. And I think the other side, obviously, is too, is you can form a group of people together who maybe, you know, believe or understand the premise and support the idea. And again, if you've got a market, if you've got some people that can test it, you're certainly going to get feedback and you're going to get an idea of whether it works. And I think the rapid prototyping certainly allows you to do that much quicker than it ever has been done before. And you look at someone like Snapchat, you know, so Snapchat, basically didn't buy a single server. They just use Amazon Web Services, and you know, a while back they turned down an offer for $4 billion from Facebook. So again, it indicates that the traditional way of doing software development probably doesn't apply anymore. And again, there are others out there doing that, so there should be no reason that a skilled IT provider can't do the same if they see a need and opportunity in the market.
Yeah, and I think IT providers in general, because they're technically inclined, they have the experience, they're much better positioned than some ad executive that says, I'm going to create this app, versus someone with a technical background. So I definitely think we have the leg up.
Okay, so let's say you've got an idea. I mean, you know, you want to develop something, you can see a market. I mean, you know, when you do scope it out and you've got some idea, obviously, of what it's going to do and the functions. I mean, what's the next step? Where should they go? I mean, what in your experience, or what would you recommend that they should be now looking to do to move that closer to reality?
You know, my suggestion is to document, to mock up your idea. And I would start, and this is how we started, on a piece of paper, just coming up with the idea and developing how the interaction and what is going to happen. There's a ton of free tools to actually do mock-ups, to be able to actually mock up how the application, the software, the mobile app, whatever it is going to work, and you're able to show the value to whoever plays around with it. For a very cost-effective rate, you can build a mock-up that can show the majority of the functionality before you have to go out and build and spend development dollars and all that stuff. And then if you've proven the hypothesis that your mock-up works and you think it's worth it to be able to then build a prototype, that minimal viable product, which is a very big, the whole lean startup methodology, just what are the minimum things you need in order to get people to pay for it, get it out there and just start getting feedback. No matter what you release or you come up with, it'll be completely different when people actually start paying for it, because you will learn so much from people using it and actually having to put their dollars down to use it.
So, I mean, is it, do you see it as something, obviously you've turned it into a successful business and grown it from there. I mean, is that the opportunity still around for, a good idea, something that obviously services a need?
I think there's unlimited opportunities. There's everything going on in Silicon Valley, and if you believe what they're saying about software eating the world and all those things, software is going to transform pretty much every industry. It's just a matter of time. And so if you have an idea, it doesn't take a lot to be able to have an idea. And if you said, going back to your example about a mobile app where people are paying $2, you don't need to sell that many to have an ongoing business, especially with a cost-effective back-end infrastructure. Or if you decide to sell something more of a business-to-business, B2B, it's not that. You don't have to charge that much. You don't need that many customers. And the beauty of the internet is that you can do it everywhere. So at BrightGage, we're on 6 of 7 continents. We're selling all over. And our biggest market are where they speak English. I mean, the U.S., Australia is number 2, and then the U.K. You can sell and scale the business so easily. So the market, I think, has a great opportunity. So you don't need a huge piece of it. You can get your small portion.
So I think this is obviously the thing which I see that a lot of technology providers seem to be missing. I mean, they're obviously into technology. I think perhaps they're too much at the coalface. They're not looking at opportunities beyond basically their own geographic area, which is typically as far as they can drive in a day to service a client. I think that they're working a lot harder than they need to be, and they're with the opportunities that are out there, they can certainly bring their knowledge and their experience. And again, make a good living, and it doesn't have to be a primary income, as you admitted. There can be secondary income, and you never know what comes from that. But I think there's a great opportunity that is sort of gone lacking. And I think the other side of that is getting into that development may teach you something interesting about Amazon Web Services, Azure, or the Google App Engine sort of thing, which you can then sell or potentially bundle up and sell either to customers or to resellers. So I think that, to me, what I'm seeing is there are a lot of resellers or MSPs who are saying, look, we're always under the pump and commoditization and the help desk isn't generating us revenue. But then I think they perhaps get too locked up in that older model and don't realize that perhaps they've got to look to newer opportunities or additional revenue streams rather than it just being a single siloed return. I think those sort of days are sort of coming to an end. And I think the smart people are obviously expanding into those areas, as you've obviously done successfully. I mean, is that, again, sort of something we can leave people with to say, look, you need to look at opportunities beyond the traditional MSP model. That's worked well, and it still may provide revenue for a period of time, but perhaps the opportunities you should be exploring are maybe a bit to the left or right of what you're doing in the MSP business.
I 100% agree. I think providing services to all those small businesses out there across the world is never going to change, and someone from a technical standpoint is going to have to help them. I think a lot of MSPs, which you articulated very well, that they're working in their business all the time and they're too busy to figure anything else out instead of working on their business. I think taking some time every once in a while to just kind of pick your head up, look at the horizon, where are things going, where am I headed, and maybe testing a couple of things, I think will help a lot.
And I think the other thing too in all of that is that you get a reality check from, like I said, a peer group or just meeting with people and talking, or having lunch and doing that sort of thing. So I think that gives you that perspective rather than, you know, you focus on your day-to-day processes and you get locked inside your business. I think, you know, getting out and getting a breath of fresh air and getting a perspective from somebody else makes a huge amount of difference, because A, they can alert you to something that you may not be aware of. So certainly a big, you know, agreement from me on that. I would believe that, you know, you are of the same mind there.
Yeah, and that's why I used to try to go to at least 2, maybe 3 conferences a year and pick the right ones that just get you out of the office. They get you thinking about different things. They get you talking to different people. And if you can travel to them, whether it's across, you know, the ocean to another continent, great. But just to get out of your environment and bring a different perspective to things.
Cool. All right. Well, like I said, we're reaching the end of our time here with Eric. So what I'll get Eric to do perhaps is just sum it all up. And if you can give us some, you know, major thoughts or major recommendations for people who have listened to the podcast and what they should be doing and what they should be focused on. And then once you've done that, just let us know how we can keep in contact with you and see what's going on with your business.
Absolutely. So I think the main takeaways on everything we talked about is that the MSP business continues to thrive. It will continue to evolve as well. And so kind of picking your head up and looking around at other opportunities is a huge, huge thing to consider on a regular basis. Introducing metrics and helping put a little bit of structure around your business will, in my opinion, help you transform and significantly grow your business. I did not really start growing heavily until I really started managing the numbers. And if you're not measuring it, it's very difficult to manage it. And then the last piece is really about making sure that you're understanding what areas are your strengths and weaknesses. As I talked about earlier, typical people really focus on, they have the experience in technology and they may have some weaknesses in other areas, but find help, whether it's through a peer group, whether it's through starting to measure things in a basic baseline, or just talking to your friendly neighbor that's in a similar industry and just picking their brain. We're not alone here. We're all trying to improve. As far as staying in touch, I love talking to folks, especially about these topics. I'm very passionate about it. So it's very easy to find me on any of the social media sites. My brother and I do have a pretty active blog, dosalbrothers.com. And we share a lot of things about not only the MSP, but what we're doing professionally, the software business and all those things. So it's a great way to keep an eye on what we're doing. We're big believers in sharing. And I do have a couple of white papers and ebooks that I've posted that are free and easy to download on the BrightGage website at brightgage.com.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that we'd basically, thank you, Eric, for your time today and all the insight that you've provided. I'll make sure that that information is put up on the show notes when we post this podcast. But again, thank you very much from all the listeners for your time today and all your insight.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me, and look forward to doing this again soon.
No worries. Thank you very much. And that's it for another episode of the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. Thanks for listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.